All right, sounds good.
All right. The Ochilli Effect.
Well, it's about goddamn time they wake up. Hell, I've been talking about this since 1959, about the corruption, the incredible lies, deception of the entire superstructure of Western civilization, and the incredible treason, lunacy, lies, deception. It's just amazing how much has been done in the past 100 years to the human family.
That was Jordan Maxwell on the Ochilli Effect. For more pods with Jordan and Chuck, search ochilli.com, along with hundreds of other shows and topics as presented by Chuck Ochilli on ochilli.com. Thanks for listening.
The Ochilli Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck Ochilli.
The name Andy Steele is great because you wind up having to discuss Steele quite often, don't you? All right, I'm making jokes here, but again, Freefall 9/11, you've been doing this for a while. It is the podcast for AE 9/11 Truth, and of course, you could go over there and find out about a lot of stuff. You know, and we've discussed many of the central issues, and I like sticking to, I don't know, the things we can prove, the things we can actually look at, and not just going into wide speculation, although on occasion, I do that too. Because it lends itself to that. Now, let's go with a basic discussion here. I know this is going to sound silly, and it's going to sound like I don't know what I'm talking about, but let's just go for the uninitiated, all right? Why is it that there would be such a massive question about what occurred on 9/11, especially in New York City, which, again, for the record, I was in New Jersey, and at the time had no clue that there was anything to question. I went with the official narrative, to be honest with you. I was very much convinced the official narrative was probably true all the way up to, I don't know, about 2008, when I started to question things. Indeed, I was one of the people trying to get on the island to help dig people out, to volunteer to dig people out, because people were in trouble immediately after the wreckage settled that morning, that crazy, I think it was a Tuesday, where all hell broke loose and they shut down Manhattan. They closed off the island. Again, I'm in New Jersey. I couldn't get over there. I tried, and then I wound up for the next couple of months sending over supplies to guys who were digging things out, who were trying to find people, who were doing that work. This was a hell of a thing that landed on us all right around that time. And again, I didn't question any of it for a very, very long time. But what are the major questions that you need to start with if somebody is in that position still where they don't think there's any reason to question this? Look, this was these pissed off Arabs with box cutters who, came across because they hate our freedoms, like our president told us. And that's what happened, and that's all there is to it. And airplanes must have crashed into buildings and knocked them down. And that's what happened. Why would you even question this to start with?
Well, I think a lot of people didn't. Now, just a quick correction. Richard is no longer with us. He's off on his own venture. Our current CEO is Roland Engel. He's a civil engineer with many years of experience and has been leading up project due diligence, which is like organizing the engineers all over the country. So I just want to make sure that that's out there, so that there's no misunderstanding there. But why question?
I was not aware of that. I'm sorry, Andy. I was not aware of that, because last time I checked, Richard was. How long ago did this happen?
A year ago.
Oh wow! See, this is me not keeping in the loop here. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that is okay, because so much goes on in this movement and in this world, and certain developments take place, and people are following us for evidence, not for all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes. But why question September 11th? That is the original premise of your question here. And, you know, I didn't. And it's so funny because I watched World Trade Center Building 7. This was the third tower that fell in that afternoon. Most people don't even know about it, but I actually watched it on television that day. And I remember my roommate at the time, I was in college, came back in the room. He said, "What just happened there?" And I said, "Oh, they brought down the building to control the fire or something." Now, there is nothing sensical in what I just said. But on that day, nobody was thinking in a very sensical type of way. And it didn't even occur to me that you can't rig a building to come down with explosives in a morning with 9/11 taking place right next door. So let's start with World Trade Center Building 7. This is a 47-story steel frame high-rise, would have been the biggest building in over 30 of our states. I used to have the exact number right at the tip of my mind there. But basically over 30 states, this would have been the tallest building. Of course, it was overshadowed by the Twin Towers. But at 5:20 in the evening on that day, the building comes down like a rock, straight and symmetric. For 8 stories of its fall, it's falling at free fall acceleration. That means it's meeting no resistance. Now, most people had never even heard of this building. They're focused on the Twin Towers, understandably, because the Twin Towers had airplanes that crashed into them, and that's what we were watching that day. Building 7 did not have an airplane crash into it. Mm-hmm. It sustained some minor damage on the corner of the building. Even NIST, that's the National Institute of Standards and Technology, that is who we butt heads with because they were tasked with finding the official causes of all three of these buildings' collapses on that day. Even they admit that this minor damage on the corner of the building had nothing to do with initiating World Trade Center 7's fall. Huh. Now, we don't have the benefit of visual aids here, but I encourage all of your listeners to go to YouTube if it hasn't been censored off of it by now, and find a video of World Trade Center 7 falling with no commentary, not even from our side of it. Just watch it fall for yourself. What does it look like to you? Again, straight down, symmetric. Roof line pretty much stays even all the way down. It looks just like a controlled demolition. And, of course, no steel frame high-rise had ever fallen because of fires alone before September 11th on that day. And then it happened 3 times, and we'll get into the Twin Towers later. Mm-hmm. So immediately we have a problem because of the way that the tower looks as it comes down. So NIST is tasked with investigating this. It took them many years, till 2008, to come up with an explanation. There were all of these theories that were thrown out there by mainstream sources over the years, and they didn't stick. Even NIST said that they couldn't stick. At one point, even Popular Mechanics, you know, that great well of debunking that supposedly put out that book refuting us, their fact checker was caught in a lie on another radio show saying he'd seen pictures of the building scooped out. Then later on, the pictures came out, and of course, there is no evidence or anything of the building being scooped out. NIST even had to admit that themselves. So what brought it down, according to NIST? Well, they say, and I'll try to simplify this, that in the corner of the building, the opposite corner of the building from where there was any damage, that the fires got so hot that they caused these beams to expand. They were framing into a girder, and the beams expanded, and they pushed the girder off of its seat. It crashed onto the floor below, and then there was this whole chain reaction of floors crashing that caused the interior of the building to come down first, and then the exterior afterwards, and that's why it looks like it was a controlled implosion. Well, there's some problems with this story. First of all, the idea that you would have the interior of a building fall and then the exterior is ludicrous on its face. I mean, it's all attached. It's not, it's not like you have the interior of a building just standing by itself and the outside just kind of gets dropped around it like some kind of shell. If that were happening, you would see evidence of this on the outside. We don't see that in the videos. We don't see any massive deformations or anything like that. The building just drops. So right. That notion is ridiculous on its face. But also, too, you know, for this new phenomenon that brings down steel frame high-rises to happen, you need raging fires in the area where they say the collapse started. But photographic evidence from an hour before this building's fall shows that on the floor where they say this happened, the fires were out. There were no raging fires there. Mm-hmm. So there's another problem. Now that should be enough. That should be enough to make them go back to the drawing board, but no, they stick with it. There's other issues too that were documented by people, associated with AE 911 Truth, where they, the simplest way to put this is they left out parts of the building. Alright, they omitted the shear studs, they omitted the stiffener plates, they got measurements wrong. When you properly correct this, it makes what NIST said happen impossible. What they claim, alright? It would have countered the thermal expansion and all of these different ways that we laid out in our books, and it would have made it impossible. So at the very least, again, NIST should go back to the drawing board, put in the missing structural features and try to come up with an explanation, but they won't do that. Mm-hmm. They won't do that. So right there, but again, that is like a major problem, but also within hours, I would say, of them releasing the report, they held this technical briefing where they, were taking questions from interested parties, and, there was a question submitted by a 9/11 researcher regarding the free fall for 8 stories as this building came down. This embarrassed them. They had to admit that this building was an absolute free fall for 105 feet of its fall. And so they had to reincorporate this new development or this new observation into their final report, because this was brought to their attention after they released their draft report, but they didn't acknowledge its significance. Again, free fall means that it's meeting no resistance. Now, when you actually look at the materials that they provided to try to support their conclusions, among them is a computer model. And you watch the computer model that NIST came up with. Now, we all know computer models and such. You can do a lot with animation. I mean, you can make video games where people fly and all these things. So, you know, they rely on these computer models. But at the very least, you would think that they could replicate what we saw in real life. But when you do a side-by-side comparison of World Trade Center 7 computer model from NIST and World Trade Center 7 in the real world, it looks they look nothing alike here. The NIST computer model begins to crumple on itself, and that's when they stop the animation. They don't even go through the full full fall of this building.
Can I pause you there? Can I pause you there for something that I've always wanted to logically ask, okay? Because I've seen other buildings collapse. I've seen smaller buildings collapse, okay? Sometimes intentionally, sometimes through fire. I've seen it happen. And what I note about Building 7 that is way different from anything I've ever seen myself is that the outside crumples, what you just mentioned. In other words, if even the inside is falling, as they say it did, right, and it's starting to fall down on itself, and they say it's a pancake and acceleration and this and that, okay, maybe. But here's the thing. The outside deforms from that. It pulls inward. It crumples inward, right? I mean, this just happens. Any kind of building that collapses, if you take out the inside of it, if the innards of that building are falling and the outside is not, it pulls the inside in. Okay? I that's what I've seen. I think they do this intentionally, too, to also make sure that debris doesn't go flying in a lot of directions when they do a controlled demolition. But even when it's unintentional, it's just a simple fact. As you said, the outside of the building is connected to the inside of the building. So if the inside is collapsing and falling, the weight of that thing falling and then combining pulls it inward. So I would say that the computer model is more real world than what we saw if they're claiming that it is the center of the building falling down inside itself and then pulling the rest down.
It may very well jive with their explanation, the computer model, but the problem is that the task is to replicate what really happened. And when you watch World Trade Center 7 fall, it's almost like, you know, like a puppet show. Like you got some kind of, like the building on a stick or something, and you're just pulling it down. They're exactly what you just said is correct. You would see massive warping on the outside here. And in their model, when I say it crumples, like the whole building begins to turn on itself and they suddenly stop it. So they don't even go through the full fall of this building when all the good stuff happens and it completely just implodes, you know, goes straight down and falls into a neat pile like a controlled demolition. And as we said, that doesn't happen in real life. But you know who was able to replicate it? The University of Alaska Fairbanks. They did a study funded by AE 911 Truth where they analyzed NIST's conclusions, tried to make it happen. Dr. Leroy Halsey of that university, a very respected engineer, was the head of it. He could not replicate the fall of what we saw in real life. He could not replicate what happened in real life using NIST's conclusions, but he was able to replicate it eventually by taking out the interior columns and then the exterior columns within seconds of each other, and then it looked exactly like what we saw. Now, you can only take out the interior columns and the exterior columns in that way with pre-planted explosives. So even though the UAF study doesn't go into those realms of speculating of how it was done, they were able to replicate it. And we can go to the next conclusion, because fire is an organic process. It's a chaotic process. It's not going to take out all of the columns at once.
Right.
So there's major issues with this story on Building 7. It is the smoking gun of the entire 9/11 event, because everything else can be obscured in rumors and such. I'm talking about the geopolitical aspects and things about the Air Force, or, you know, they can come up with explanations, but they cannot come up with a logical explanation for why this building just suddenly fell. And so they give us an illogical one. And even when we bring this to their attention, I mean, we submitted a request for correction. Ted Walter, our director of strategy, wrote it. We submitted this request for correction, and then, they refused to do anything with it, so we had to take them to court. Now, you know, we're going to be appealing it because the judge is throwing it out over standing issues. They can never directly take on the evidence that we bring. So that's why we're asking for the support of all our people on our membership list to take this as far as we need to take it, because they do not want to address the many glaring issues with these reports that they issued. And it's a shame, because the American taxpayer, the people who watched 9/11 on television, we were all deeply affected by it. We're still in the post 9/11 world here. You know, you go to bed at night thinking that your government is doing its due diligence, trying to do the best that it can do, but, you know, when you actually hold its feet to the fire, you see that they are ignoring observable facts, just doing everything that they can to get around some of the glaring issues with the official story. You know, it's almost like, it's, let's say you have a teddy bear you buy for your girlfriend at the fair and you want to bring it home to her, but you can't get it in the suitcase. So you start cutting arms and legs off of it. By the end, it doesn't look like anything you expect it to be.
Right.
And that's what NIST did with this official story. The simplest, you know, we talked on Jack Blood's show about Occam's razor. The simplest explanation here, when you take into account all of the evidence, is that explosives were used. But that was an instant non-starter with them. So they're not looking for the truth or trying to get at any kind of a conclusion as to what really happened. This is a mass perception job that we were given by NIST. And it's, these reports are loaded with a ton of verbiage and jargon, but no substance. And they just hope that will pass. But I mean, you know, we can go into all of the other things beyond just the physics of this building coming down. I mean, we have explosions being reported by at least 118 first responders. And this was from a study done by Professor Graham McQueen. And he was so conservative with how he did this. I mean, he had a very strict yardstick by which he looked at these accounts. And these are from the oral histories documented by the city. But he would look at these accounts and he would, you know, if somebody said, "I heard a boom," he would not count that. He would only look for specific words like explosions when people described explosions, and at least 118 accounts from the people that day. I mean, we have people, describing a shockwave ripping throughout World Trade Center 7 as it came down. Does this sound like a natural progressive collapse to you? Most steel frame high rises, when they catch on fire, and we've seen this time and time again when fires break out in them, they light up like a torch in the night. Now, there may be some pieces of the buildings that fall away here and there, but in the end, you still have a steel frame skeleton standing, and a lot of times, they're able to renovate it and use it again, rent out to office spaces, and the building continues to remain.
Right.
But not in this case, because of random fires, supposedly.
Well, I remember a bunch of films showing, you know, here's a fire that burned in a steel frame structure building for hours, and it didn't collapse the entire building. Only pieces fell away, like you said. I remember seeing this, and it is strange to me because, again, this building that we're talking about was not hit directly by a plane, according to anybody's account. It was hit with debris, right? So I've heard that explanation. And they say, oh, well, look, a bunch of debris came from the other buildings and struck Building 7. This ruined the integrity of the, you know, the structure, and it fell for that reason. Now, I got to tell you, again, when I first heard about this kind of stuff, I didn't think anything of it, just like you, with Building 7. Well, they must have taken it down for safety or something. But, of course, you learn a little bit later, that doesn't make any kind of sense.
Right.
Anyway, but what about this idea that, hey, listen, it was hit by a bunch of stuff, and, well, look, it happened to collapse after that. Why doesn't that work as an explanation?
Well, because, I mean, according to NIST, and they have to, based on observations of the videos, they have to say this, because the collapse initiated, by their own story, on the opposite corner from where the damage happened.
Right.
So that damage, again, you know, I mean, there was some minor damage to the corner of the building. However, other buildings in the area sustained damage, and they burned. And there you can see videos of them, Building 5, 6, all the other ones. Mm-hmm. You know, they burned. Firefighters fought the fires that day. But Building 7, you know, had its amount of damage, but the collapse initiated in the opposite corner of the building. So right there, that throws out the idea that this damage somehow, you know, damaged the structural integrity of this building, and that's why it came down in a controlled demolition fashion. So they can't get around that. They have to admit that one. But they have to go with this random office fires. And they have to count on these raging fires, even though there are no raging fires in the photographs. Even though fire is an organic process and the fires can only burn for 1.5 hours, give or take, and then they move around into an area, you know, they're counting on people thinking that it was almost like a hibachi barbecue under these beams, causing them to thermally expand. But even if you don't agree with me, even if, you know, you still want to hold on to the idea out there that there could be a logical explanation for why this building came down, why not include the missing structural features I cited earlier? Why not correct the report? Why not rerun the analysis just to deal with people like me? Because it's not just me. I'm just one guy, but there are millions around the world who don't believe this official story, mainly because of World Trade Center 7. So why not address it? Because it is the biggest mass murder in U.S. history. And even though officially nobody died in World Trade Center 7, I'm aware of all the stuff with Barry Jennings, but officially nobody died in that building.
Right.
You know, even though that's the case, people did die in the Twin Towers, and it was all part of the 9/11 event. And people are not going to forget about World Trade Center 7. Thanks to the efforts of architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth and everybody in the 9/11 Truth movement who keeps on reminding the world about this.
Right.
So,
and by the way, somebody put in my chat room an article by Graham McQueen, which is titled "Waiting for 7 WTC 7 Collapse Warnings in the FDNY Oral Histories." So I'm going to include that with the show notes as well. That's on the AE911truth.org website. So the article is there. The whole thing that you just talked about is on the website. Okay. Anyways, that'll be in the show notes. The other thing here is that, okay, so, and I'm not, understand, I'm on your side, okay? I'm just offering you the questions that are often given to me when I say, look, of course, this is something that needs to be questioned, you know? Why is this not being questioned? I would say, when it comes to the recreation, okay, now this is going to sound really insane, but if you want to do an absolutely correct forensic recreation, you got to put all the desks back in that building. You got to put all the equipment back in that building. You got to put everything back in that building. I mean, you're talking about some structural pieces. Yeah, absolutely. But you got to put everything in there. And now, show me in your recreation, okay, in your computer model, that this works. Because if you can't, as you said, well, then what's the problem? Either your model doesn't know how to model, or it's wrong. It's wrong. Unless,
well,
yeah, go ahead.
I'll add on to that. Now, you know, what was in World Trade Center 7 is really no different than what's in every office building across this world, any kind of professional office building. You've got desks, you've got papers, you've got furniture, right, things like that. Certainly you wouldn't want to be standing in the room when they catch on fire, but in terms of melting structural steel, and we'll get into all the melting of girders and things like that that was reported at the scene, but it's no different than any other high-rise office building. But, you know, speaking of the models and recreating, it is very difficult to recreate the exact situation, but NIST released this computer model. It only goes up to the point of collapse initiation and stops. Doesn't look anything like the real world. Now, the smart thing would be to say, okay, if you've got a problem with our model, go ahead and try to replicate it yourself. Make it available to the American taxpayer that pays for this model. Mm-hmm. For independent researchers to check their data, the input data, and the validity of it, but NIST wouldn't release it. You know why? They said it would jeopardize public safety if we released our input data on our model. So you can't even independently verify it.
So you can't independently verify that they even put the correct information in the first place, because you're not allowed to see it because it would violate public safety somehow?
Apparently for a building that no longer exists, it would jeopardize public safety. Now, you know, if you really want to get crazy with this, let's say you believe NIST's official story. Well, what is their official story? That fire brought it down? That it caused thermal expansion? How hard is that for somebody to figure out then? If this can suddenly happen now and you want to bring down a building, starting random office fires is not really that in-depth of a process. You just start the fire and run. So the entire argument itself doesn't make any sense on its face. Basically they don't want to be independently fact-checked. They don't want to be have us find problems with their information. So no, they will not release it, and they count on an apathetic American public not being aware of this, not being too intensely involved with this issue and not demanding accountability from these agencies we trust to give us these reports. That's what they're counting on, but that's why we got to make a lot of noise out there and make this issue a big one. Put this out into the face of John Q. Public out there and make them realize that they were lied to in these decades that followed this horrible event.
Right. I say that they learned quite a bit from us in the JFK research community, because every time we went to go check out the FBI's testing, when it came down to ballistics and everything else, we'd find flaws in their testing. We'd find that they didn't use the right parameters, that they used incorrect information, they used the wrong weapon, and I think they wanted to avoid that that kind of problem that they've had now for almost 60 years with the JFK research people, which is interesting thought. I'm sorry, that's my speculation, Andy. That's my words, not yours. Sorry. But that's what it seems like to me, because otherwise, why not have full disclosure with the data and how it is you came to these conclusions?
Well, yeah, and it's not just minor things that are being found, where you can sort of forgive the powers that be that put out these reports because it's, you know, it has no bearing on the final result. I mean, these are major things that not only change the outcome, not only change the whole concept of what actually happened to this building, but change the whole perception of the 9/11 event itself. Because for me, at least, I mean, the case was made 10 years ago that these buildings were brought down in controlled demolitions. I'm not just saying we think it. We know these buildings were brought down in controlled demolitions. And so then the next logical question comes to who did it. We don't focus on that here at AE 9/11 Truth, but then the government would be tasked to actually do its job and do some real investigating, and they don't want to do that. They don't want to ask those questions. So, you know, they do not want the stuff checked. You know, and something else too. You know, we have the BBC on that day, Jane Stanley from the BBC reporting, with the building still standing behind her, Building 7, reporting that Building 7 has already collapsed. This is 20 minutes before the building actually did collapse.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not saying that she had any clue. She's probably just there on the scene in the middle of all this chaos getting handed papers to report. You know, but the building is still standing there right behind her. And then right before it actually does collapse, they lose the feed.
Right.
And CNN reported it early that day. Now, the other side wants to claim that this actually comes from an interview with one of the fire chief down there. They said, oh, there was an engineer on the scene who said that Building 7 was going to come down. They report this bulge coming out of the building. Mm. You know, there's no evidence of this. This is just something that gets thrown out by debunkers without being backed up in any way. So this is just hearsay. But if there really was an engineer on the scene that day making this call, why haven't we heard from him? Why didn't NIST bother to interview this person? I mean, he'd be pretty darn important in this entire story. Why don't History Channel, you know, when they're putting out specials claiming to debunk us, why don't they interview this person? I mean, you know, put him in shadow, alter his voice if he doesn't want to be bothered, but let's get his testimony on the record. But they won't do that for whatever reason. And there was no good reason to think this because, again, this had never happened before. This build that a steel frame building could just suddenly collapse like this. It was an unprecedented event. So how could they be predicting that this would happen when there is no precedent for it? You know, they stopped firefighting efforts inside this building.
Right.
And just let it burn. There was no reason for that because firefighters were fighting other fires there and, you know, building 5 and 6 and all that. You could see them right on video. Mm-hmm. So there's some major problems when it comes to Building 7. And, of course, there's major problems when it comes to the Twin Towers as well, which I'll be happy to get into when you're up for me doing it.
Yeah, no, I want to transition to the Twin Towers, but I don't want to leave this point alone because, as you said, the BBC reporter, I've had people make different things of that over the years. And I got to say that I don't blame her. She was, like you said, handed something. Other buildings had collapsed that day, so what does she know from which building is which? Okay.
Exactly.
You know, she could be reporting on it, but, well, Building 7, what does she know from Building 1, 2, 7, 5? She doesn't. I don't think anybody really knew about that outside of New York City. Honestly, seriously, before 2001, did anybody give much consideration to it except it was a landmark? Probably not. They didn't think about what the numbers of the buildings were or any of that. So the idea that somebody would have handed this BBC reporter whatever, and she read it because that's her job, is to read the reports. She's not actually, you know, an investigator. She's a person talking on TV at that moment. So therefore, it makes perfect sense. But it is wild that they say, oh, well, you know, this whole thing about the guy who observed the bulge in the building. Yeah, of course you'd have to interview this guy. He's got something that I don't think anybody else has ever really talked about. If he observed that, and as a firefighter, as somebody who is supposed to be a chief or somebody in authority in a fire department, they know a lot more about these things, especially in cities. They have to. They got to know when pieces of a building are going to fall down, for instance, right? Because they got to know where to stage their people.
Well, this isn't even a firefighter, though. This is supposedly an engineer that was on the scene helping out the fire department.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And yet we've never heard this engineer's name.
No, I've never heard this. No, matter of fact, I got to tell you, I don't even recall this being said in most places. This may be a newer debunker thing because I've never heard it. I've always heard the whole, you know, debris hit it and that's it, you know, kind of explanation. From the other
I call
side.
It a debunker urban legend.
Okay.
There is no real doc. I mean, this comes from the fire chief, so it's just hearsay. But again, that doesn't take into account the physics that we talked about earlier, the fact that NIST won't even rerun its analysis with the correct structural features inside, you know, all of that stuff. So I always say this, and I even had a debunker on my own show who had to agree with me in the end on this point, is what is the harm in simply rerunning the analysis? I mean, we spent so much money on these reports. You know, we've spent money on so many other things that were less serious than September 11th. What is the harm of simply rerunning the analysis and making sure they got things right? If you agree with us on that very common sense basic point, then you should be signing the petition at ae911truth.org. Let's clear up this mystery of history. Not a mystery to me. I know what happened to it. But let's clear it up and give the American people a report and let the truth come forward regardless of where it goes. You know, let the chips fall where they may.
Absolutely.
That's all we're asking for.
Absolutely. And as we go to break, yes, let's keep that in mind. And you can go over. I'll give you the link to go hook up with the petition. Go sign it. common sense tells you that this is something that should be done. I'll tell you what, do it to debunk this. Do it to contradict what AE 911 says. It should be done. Do it to support what AE 911 says. Okay? Either way, you should be supporting the idea of rerunning the simulation. You should definitely support that. So I'll give people the link to that. Andy Steele is with me, and we'll be back after a short break.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold. Silver. The stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I'm interested in the truth about the JFK assassination.
Right. Well, what do you want to know?
Judy Baker's wild claim, Oswald girlfriend, she knew Ruby and Barry, cancer weapon. Really?
I imagine I could claim I have four wheels. It doesn't make me a wagon, but okay.
Oswald was on the kill team and trying to prevent the murder of John Kennedy. Come on now. Has a real expert on the JFK assassination look into her claims?
Go to Amazon.com. Enter Judith Baker in her own words. You'll get results for a digital copy of a book where Walt Brown utilizes her own words and the known evidence in the case to get at, well, a different perspective, let's say. You can get Judith Barry Baker in her own words from the author himself, signed if you request it, by contacting Dr. Brown at KIASJFK@AOL.com. It's a fun book, and it actually dissects the many, many fantastic claims. Judith Barry Baker in her own words.
Thank you for all the great information.
Entertainment, and more. You will learn something, children's. Ocelli.com.
Revelation through conversation.
Second segment of the Ocelli Effect begins now. Andy Steele is with me, and he is not just the host of Freefall 911. It's a podcast available just about everywhere podcasts are, pretty much like this show, probably in more places, but anyway, is what it is, and he does that, but he's also extremely knowledgeable, apparently, about, the questions that need to be answered regarding 9/11. Now, we've talked about Building 7 now for about a half hour, but, let's turn to the thing that everybody focuses on, and that's the Twin Towers. So, Andy, again, I hate to do this to you, but let's go again from the position of the uninitiated. We all know the towers fell. I mean, if you're above a certain age, you definitely remember it. And if you're below a certain age, it's one of those things that everybody above that age marks. So, you know, here we go. It's something that did indeed change our reality. One way or another, we got the Patriot Act. We got the War on Terror. We got all that stuff, which, you know, I know hardly anybody's talking about considering the headlines as of late and blah, blah. But it is something that has shaped the past couple of decades, one way or another. So let's go back to the Twin Towers, and who knows, maybe I'll even ask you about the Pentagon before we're done. But let's go to the Twin Towers. What do you say to somebody who says, look, you know, again, it's the same thing. That's what brought down Building 7. Well, it really, really brought down Buildings 1 and 2. And again, I think unless you lived in New York City, you wouldn't even identify these buildings as number this, number that. You didn't necessarily even know that there was a whole complex of buildings there that were connected and interactive. But everybody knew the Twin Towers. I mean, they were a landmark. They were the thing that was cut away from the New York skyline. So where do we begin with that?
Yeah, I mean, the Twin Towers, that is the most iconic image of the 21st century, of a sort of a welcome to the new world for a lot of us who were just starting our adult lives, like myself, when that all happened. Yeah. And so let's get into it. So airplanes struck both of the towers. We're all aware of that story, and then they came down. Most people just made some assumptions based off of very vague explanations they were given on TV that, oh, it just must have been a really bad impact, and that's why these buildings came, and that the floors hit each other on the way down, and that's why they just ceased to exist completely after that day. Just was dust dispersed all throughout Manhattan. All right. But what is the official story of that when you really dive into it? Now, in the years following September 11th, there were a lot of attempts to try to put out an explanation for what we saw. Of course, they never considered controlled demolition. That was an instant non-starter for the corporate media. But I remember Nova put out an animation explaining very matter-of-factly, as if they knew, you know, explaining how these buildings came down. And according to their animation, it was a beautiful animation, the floors hit each other as they came down. So they said it was a pancake collapse, and it was like records falling on a spindle. And you watch their animation, and you say, okay, wait a second. In their animation, the core columns are still standing, even as the towers are, or I'm sorry, even as the floors are hitting each other, coming down. But that didn't happen in real life. Right. So again, they're saying that it's floors, like records on a spindle hitting each other, going down the core columns. But that's not what we observed. There were no core columns still remaining. In fact, we didn't see pancakes laying on top of each other at ground zero. So we got to throw that explanation out. And of course, NIST did too. That's not what happened on that day. Most people will agree with that. So within a few days of this event, a professor out of Northwestern University named Professor Zdenek Bazant, I always have trouble pronouncing it, but that's his name, okay, came up with an explanation. He submitted it as a theory, and NIST actually adopted this for its official story in their reports. What he says happened, and again, I don't have visual aids with me here, so I'm going to ask everyone to just use your imagination. Imagine the towers. We'll take one of them, one of the Twin Towers, as being broken up into three different units. You've got the bottom portion where nothing is happening. You've got the middle portion where the airplane impacted, and then you got a top portion, which is above the airplane impact. So they say that the fires got so hot inside the impact zones that they, you know, pulled the external columns inward, that the beams sagged and pulled the external columns inward, and these top blocks fell and acted as a pile driver, driving the entire building to the ground. Now, it's kind of funny when you look at Zdenek Bazant's little cartoon that he drew of this. You see this top block driving the building down, but then it just suddenly kind of disappears as it gets to the bottom. Just kind of commit suicide there, because we never do see a top block sitting on the debris at ground zero. The whole building just pulverized in midair. So what is the problem with this? Well, there was a Graham McQueen again and a mechanical engineer, Tony Zambodi. They ran the fall of one of the towers through some physics software, and what they determined, what they were able to find out, is that there was no deceleration as this top block hit the lower portion of the building. And this is a big deal because think about it. When you hit a nail with a hammer, I don't care what kind of force you're driving it with, as that hammer hits the nail, it is going to slow down,
right?
Because it's meeting resistance. But in this case, it actually accelerated as it came down. And that can only happen if this bottom portion of the building was being removed at the same time. So it couldn't have acted as a pile driver, because if there was a pile driver effect, it certainly would have slowed as it hit the top portion. Plus, it wouldn't have had enough energy to bring the building all the way to the bottom. Now, interesting enough, I've seen Hollywood movies that actually get this concept right. They actually know their physics better than NIST does, apparently, because there's been movies where you have a top portion of a building come straight down and it crushes a little of the way, but then it destroys itself or it falls off to the side. That's what we should have expected to see on the Twin Towers as they came down. Actually, in the case of the South Tower, you can see this top block begin to rotate, and it starts to fall over to the side of the building. And you would expect that it's going to continue its momentum and crash onto the plaza below, which would have been a horrible thing to have happen as well. But in the video, what happens is it changes its direction. Because there's work being done on the corner columns. When I use the word work, I'm talking about, removal of the core columns of these buildings. So, what it's resting on is disappearing, so it's able to change its direction and fall into the middle of the building. So, we have a major problem here with the story and with the Besant's analysis. Again, when you try to correct it, they're Tony Zambodi and Richard Johns, another great researcher, have been trying to get a paper criticizing Besant's work published by the ASCE. They keep on resisting and fighting this. They don't want it to happen, because when you eliminate Besant's hypothesis or his conclusions from this equation, NIST is left with nothing. They rely on this pile driver theory being correct. There's another problem with NIST's story. So they have, from observing the videos, let's just take the North Tower here. From observing the videos, they have to acknowledge that the collapse initiated on the 98th floor, right? But there was very little damage to the displaced fire insulation, because that's another key factor involved in their explanation. The fire insulation would have kept these beams from, absorbing all of this heat and then sagging and initiating everything that they said took place there. So they say that when the airplanes impacted the towers, it knocked the fire insulation off and they were exposed, right? Now, so the collapse begins on the 98th floor, but only the tip of the wing of the airplane hit that floor. It had very minor damage there. So right there, by that mere fact alone, if this was a movie, that would end the court case right then and there. But this is the real world, and we have a government that's covering up the truth of these events, and they just, they don't want to look at that. But right there is a fact. Only the tip of the wing hit that floor. It couldn't have knocked off all the fire insulation on that floor. So what do we do with this? Well, you reinvestigate it in a rational world. I mean, you can see the communications antenna of the North Tower. It fell before any other part of the building came down. And this indicates that there was core column damage going on right before we saw it, the top block begin to come down. So you have to remove the core in order to have this kind of complete destruction happening. Also, too, you're relying on this pile driver to drive the building all the way to the ground, but the pile driver disappears within the first 4 seconds of this building's collapse. And I use that word loosely, right? So it's no longer there. It's no longer there. It just vaporizes. It all turns to powder in midair. Now, you would assume, right? I'm going to ask you. You would assume that for this kind of pulverization of concrete, you would need a hard impact of building materials to take place, correct?
Well, yeah. In order to crush concrete into powder, yeah, you have to. That's a hell of a lot of force. Yeah.
Well, let's get into physics then, because NIST admits that the towers fell, quote, essentially at free fall. So, how do you have this kind of hard collision of building materials when the buildings are falling essentially at free fall, which means it's meeting no resistance?
Well, you'd have to have one or the other, right? I mean, you can't have both is what the problem is here. And look, a quick addendum to something you said earlier where you said that the powder went all throughout Manhattan. I got news for you. It went past Manhattan. I'm sure you're aware, but I'll just add this for the listener. You know, we saw that stuff in Jersey City, in Bayonne, coating the windows of apartments, cars, the ground. Okay. That dust traveled across the river. Okay. I'm just saying, I know wind and blah, 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 but I'm just trying to say that this was not something that, did not travel just beyond Manhattan. I just want to note that for the listener. And I saw that myself. So I know that that's true.
Exactly. You know, and if you watch these mainstream accounts, they make it seem like these buildings were so flimsy that they were just these hollow tubes that were just holding up floors from the exterior, and thank God they didn't fall down sooner. I mean, you would believe that if you had applied any kind of common sense to what they are saying, but actually the towers were very massively strong, and they got stronger as you got to the bottom, naturally, of course.
They would have to.
The floors, what'd you say?
I said they would have to. Because
and
matter of fact, I remember seeing films of the construction of these things, which were more available, I think, when I was a kid, because I was born in the early 70s, so they were still showing films of these things like in the early 80s of that having been completed. It was only completed a few years before that. I forget the exact year of completion, but I'm pretty sure it was still going on when I was born in 72. That they were still building these things. So this stayed up this long, okay, and they talk about it swaying in the wind and all these different things, and I'm like, this doesn't make any sense to me, that this is this flimsy and it remained like that long through hurricanes, through snow, through other things that have happened, you know, through the fact that we had the bombing in 93, right? Nothing collapsed then. If it's such a house of cards... You know, they blew up the basement pretty well there, whoever did, just saying. In 93, you would have thought that these things would have fallen long before this. All right, anyway, if they were that flimsy, I'm sorry, but go back to your point. I just wanted to point that out because, again, I lived in that area, and these legendary landmarks, I don't know, seemed pretty solid to me. And they did make sense that they would have to have more... strength toward the bottom because it's carrying the weight of everything above it. So, you know, simple physics, right? I mean, or am I out of my mind?
No, ninth grade physics. Again, you don't even need a fancy degree to understand these concepts. All you have to do is live on planet Earth for a few years and, you know, it becomes intuitive to you. And again, you know, going back to how strong these buildings were, there's people who will portray these buildings as if they were so weak. They'll say things like, oh, you know, the buildings were designed to fall that way, control the fire or something. I don't know why they even say this. There's no insurance company that would insure a building that will just collapse like that if an airplane hits it or there's some kind of damage like we saw when the airplanes hit it. But the floors themselves were reinforced, the concrete floors. They were reinforced with it's called welded wire fabric. There were core columns in these buildings. They were very sturdy buildings, and they were built to withstand airplane impacts. There was actually a plaque somewhere in one of the towers, I can't remember which one, that said – and I don't have the exact quote in my head, but it said something to the effect of, don't worry if an airplane hits this, it's built to withstand it. So what happened there? Of course, they say the pile driver action. We've already proven why that can't possibly be true. We can also observe in the videos of the buildings coming down, the Twin Towers, you can see misplaced explosions happening far below the collapse line. These are called squibs. Demolition squibs. So imagine it. You have the building supposedly collapsing way up here, but far below where nothing is happening at that moment, you have mistimed explosions going off. You can see building materials in them. So it's not just air being pressed out by a piston action like the other side wants to claim. There's actual building materials coming out in these squibs. You can see molten metal streaming from the South Tower on video. Prior to its collapse, all right? And it is a bright orange coming out, and NIST wants to say, I think it's NIST that says it, that it's molten aluminum from the airplane, but aluminum is silver in daylight conditions. We all remember September 11th. It was a bright blue Tuesday morning in New York. Right. And even when Chaim Sunder was interviewed about this, he claimed that it was silver coming out of this building, when you can clearly see for yourself that it's bright orange right. streaming out. So they don't even get their facts right when they're talking about this.
No, they don't.
So we're the ones debunking them.
Yeah, that's the interesting part here is also what conditions would be required to create molten steel. Anybody ask that question? What is the temperature? And then people say, well, look, you know, jet fuel burns really hot, and that's your accelerant. And I'm wondering, you know, how much jet fuel does it take to maintain a furnace like that, in order to break down the metal, or are these illogical questions?
No, they're very good questions, and it's ones that we have addressed, and NIST has addressed it too. I mean, talking about the jet fuel, because I mean, according to them, jet fuel has can level an entire city now, apparently. Right. Let's keep in mind though that these airplanes, when you see the pictures of the airplanes going towards the buildings, the airplanes are very small and very dwarfed by the twin towers. And then the engines are gas tanks, or whatever you want to call them, on the airplanes are smaller than the airplanes. So that's about the amount of fuel that it can hold.
Right.
A lot of that fuel was spent in the large fireballs that are shooting out of the building when we see the airplanes impact them. In fact, one of the firefighters is on radio, and the recording is available, saying that we've got two isolated pockets of fire. We should be able to knock it out with two lines. These were very fightable fires in these towers. Getting back to the temperature that you need in order to melt the steel, structural steel doesn't begin to melt until around 2,750 degrees Fahrenheit. And the jet fuel temperatures, they only can go between 800 and 1,500 degrees. So there's this meme put out there, and it's put out there to ridicule people like me. It says, jet fuel can't melt steel. Ha, 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 ha. Well, just because they add that ha, ha, ha at the end doesn't make it any less true. It can't. And so the other side will say, well, the steel didn't need to melt. It just sagged and all of this. But yes, but that still doesn't explain why it melted. And we have reports from people who were there on the scene reporting molten steel, molten iron. There. I mean, fused debris of concrete and iron being pulled out of the pile. I mean, somebody reporting a little river of steel flowing. First responders were having their boots melting as they walked onto the debris there to try to sift through it, find people trapped under it. This is well documented in so many different oral histories that we have captured in our film Blueprint for Truth. You can see one after another people reporting it. I mean, you had fires burning there for weeks under the debris. All right. So what is going to cause that? Now, Chaim Sunder, when he was cornered about this, and he was one of the lead investigators on the NIST report, mm-hmm. he said, well, maybe, you know, the fires were covered for so much longer that they just got hotter. Now, again, this is not an official NIST talking point. This is just him speculating on the spot. Well, okay. No, fires, if they're covered, are going to be oxygen starved. They're going to get weaker. That's why you see in those old shows when there was a fire, somebody would throw a blanket over it or whatever, because you're depriving it of oxygen. All right, but these fires went on for a long time afterwards, and we've never given – well, we've gotten an explanation, but not from our government. We've gotten it from AE 9/11 Truth, which I'll be happy to get into. But I'll be happy to take any questions on the Twin Towers and give you a chance to talk.
No, hey, look, I want to know, what is the explanation for that? How did it get that hot? Of course, I've heard about, okay, look, it doesn't need to melt the steel. It just needs to weaken it so it'll sag. Of course, in a condition where, again, you have a chaotic situation like fire, because as you said in the first portion of the discussion here, fire is a chaotic situation. You're not going to have even temperatures all over the place, so there should be uneven results among this steel structure, which is evenly constructed. Well, that would indicate to me we should see an uneven collapse. Mm-hmm. If that's the case, if it was actually caused by weakened steel, which then sagged, right? Or am I wrong there, too?
Well, I mean, again, fire is a chaotic process, so you're never going to get the same result twice. in most cases when you have two different events. And of course, you know, both towers were struck by airplanes, but they were struck in different areas of the buildings, yet we saw the same outcome on both collapses. And then of course with Building 7, again, an event that had never happened before happens three times in one day there in New York. And we're supposed to just believe that there was nothing else to it. And then when you actually look into their analysis and you look into everything that they got wrong, again, a new investigation is the most reasonable thing to ask for, considering that so many people died on that day. And just like with World Trade Center 7, we were talking about the computer animations, NIST and the Twin Towers only run up to the point of collapse initiation. They give an explanation saying, well, the rest of it, you know, you just kind of follows reason, right? You know, we don't need to go past the initiation of collapse. Well, you know, all those people that died in those towers, they died because of what happened after the initiation of collapse. So we ought to run it all the way through.
Right.
But they don't do that. They don't want to do that. So.
No, I absolutely agree with you, because the bottom line here, again, is that you can't possibly expect the same result to occur uniformly, and yet that is what we're looking at, with the exception of, you do have that twist at a certain point there that you talked about with, you know, like the top of the tower turns a certain way, and then it falls mm-hmm. back into it. That is the only thing that looks organic to the explanation, but then when it changes trajectory and goes down, you know, it doesn't explain the rest of it. It just doesn't. And here's the thing, like you said, what would be the problem with rerunning this? Why not rerun the analysis? Why not rerun the simulations? I mean, that's the only thing that actually makes perfect sense, no matter what position you take on this. Anyway, Andy Steele is with me. We're still having this discussion on the Ocelli effect, and I'll continue with it. We'll go past the Twin Towers, maybe, after this.
History that you were never taught in schools. Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia. By author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before that'll open your eyes to events that led up to this. Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961. Get your copy today at Amazon.com. Why? The Vietnam War by author Mike Swanson.
The views expressed by callers, co-hosts, or anyone else who happens to get on the air at Ocelli.com do not necessarily reflect the views of Ocelli.com or Chuck Ocelli, and we are not responsible for any stupidity which might ensue. Thank you.
The War State by Michael Swanson explains the great national transformation that took place and put the Kennedy presidency in the context of the times, and reveals never-before-published information about the Cuban Missile Crisis. President Kennedy would not have been assassinated if he had been president 200 years ago. His assassination took place in the context of the Cold War and the rise of the national security state. Before World War II, the United States was a continental republic. In the decade that followed, it became an imperial superpower. Generals such as Curtis LeMay not only wanted to invade Cuba, but knew that there were short-range missiles on the island armed with nuclear warheads that they could not destroy because they were on mobile launchers. Their invasion could have led to a third world war, and they wanted to go to war anyway. The War State by Michael Swanson reveals why and will show you what President Kennedy was up against. For more information, thewarstate.com.
This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you're tuned into the Ocelli Effect.
Ocelli.com.
Once again, they ride the rail. You better run up the glass in the way.
third segment of the Ocelli Effect here on a Monday night. Glad you are with us, no matter who you are, where you are, when you are, because I know most of you will catch this via the podcast. I want you to look in the show notes, though, because there's going to be a lot of them tonight, folks. Andy Steele is with me. He is with AE911 Truth. Now, he does the podcast, which is Freefall 911. I have the title of that right, Andy, don't I? Freefall
911 Freefall, but people will find it with that.
Okay. Sorry. You know, I do this all the time where I mix things up because I bookmark stuff and I mix up titles. So anyway, I got your name correct though. Andy Steele.
So that's me.
That helps. But if you go and you look at, 911 Freefall and Andy Steele, if you put that into a search engine, guaranteed you'll find the podcast. Also, you might find, I found an interview that he did with somebody else on YouTube. I'll include that with the show notes, along with a bunch of articles that discuss directly the issues that we have been going over tonight. And, you know, and again, I urge you to go sign the petition, because no matter what you think of the controversy, or as they would say over on the other side of the pond, the controversy over this issue, I think it would be necessary to have these questions adequately and correctly answered. Okay? And even if you don't agree that these things need to be questioned and the official narrative is right, how about we confirm it scientifically? Go back over this stuff. Run the simulations again. Run the models again. Show us the data. Wouldn't that be nice? You're paying for it, after all, if you live in this place we used to call America. So, Andy, we were on the Twin Towers, obviously, and we were talking about different things. I didn't mean to correct you, by the way, when I just wanted to point out that that dust went way further than Manhattan. It did. Okay. And the only reason why I say it is because I saw it, and we had to clean it up and didn't even know what the hell it was. But, you know, some people picked up that dust in some places and did analysis on it. And maybe you want to talk a little bit about that, or some of the other things that have gone on, or maybe some of the explanations that could be had regarding to what the hell actually happened to those two landmarks in the New York skyline.
Right. Well, we've been talking a lot about the physics of these buildings and the impossible explanations that were given to us by the National Institute of Standards and Technology. And then, as I mentioned, we've got fires burning for weeks there on the pile at Ground Zero, and we've got molten steel, molten iron there. In fact, before NIST was tasked with investigating this, FEMA did a report, and in Appendix C of the FEMA report, they document a steel member, and it's got holes in it, like Swiss cheese. You can actually see a picture of this. So what they're describing is steel that is basically evaporated. That takes 4,000-degree temperatures. What is causing all of this? That is the next logical question to ask yourself if you're tasked with investigating this very important matter that still affects us to this day. But NIST refuses to do that. We'll get into that in a little bit here. But there was a team of people led by Dr. Niels Harrit out of Copenhagen, Denmark, that did test the dust. Now, something that was already known before they did that, because this was picked up by a lot of different entities that did their own reports on the fall of the towers or just on the scene, was that the dust contained these little iron microspheres in it, these little iron balls, very tiny. And all these other reports use these iron microspheres to distinguish World Trade Center dust from what they call background dust. You know, background dust would be dust that has absolutely nothing to do with the fall of these towers. It was so prevalent in there that they actually used this as a signature to determine, okay, this came from the World Trade Center. So this point is not in debate, that these iron microspheres were there. So they ran tests on them, and what they found were these red-gray chips all throughout the dust, and the components of these chips were of iron oxide and aluminum, and when they're combined, it creates an extreme heat reaction. Now, these are the same elements that are found in a material called thermite. Now, thermite actually has been used in demolitions before. In fact, there is a patent on a structural steel cutter charge that exists that can utilize the thermite by having it come out through a narrow channel, and you can actually make cuts in the steel by using these these kinds of charges. So thermite is something that is used in demolitions. So, you know, they started looking into that hypothesis, Dr. Niels Hera and his team. And what they found is that these were very microscopic particles, you know, so small that they allowed for immediate, really fast ignition. As in, you know, flashing when the aluminum and the iron oxide are ignited. Now, this was a very interesting point, and they did tests on them. Because, you know, what the other side of this whole debate came out and said was, oh, there's nothing significant about these red-gray chips. These were just primer paint, you know, from the World Trade Center. So there was ignition tests done on these chips. And you can actually watch this on YouTube. I don't know if YouTube has taken this down or not, but if you can find it, they do a side-by-side comparison of one of these red-gray chips along with a primer paint chip when they ignite it. The primer paint chip just turns black and wilts. But one of these red-gray chips from the World Trade Center dust, when ignited, they flash and they have a thermitic reaction, and they actually form one of these iron microspheres that were found throughout the World Trade Center dust. So now we're starting to come to a conclusion here. And actually, in one of the tests performed by Dr. Hera and his team, one of the red-gray chips was soaked in methyl ethyl, and I don't know if I can say this right, ketone, and that's a paint solvent. And the paint, typically, when it's put in the solvent, will dissolve within a few hours, right? But the red-gray chips did not dissolve, all right? They remained in the solvent for 55 hours, and they still remained hard all throughout that. So it's not primer paint, and it has a thermitic reaction when ignited. But this is a special kind of thermite. This wasn't just because there was a National Geographic special that tried to debunk this, and what they did is they put hefty bags on steel full of thermite, and when it didn't do anything, they said, see, look, all the truthers are debunked. But no, this was a special kind of thermite, and of course they wouldn't have just put it in hefty bags around the beams. It would have been channeled through some kind of device. The patent exists for that, and there was actually a 9/11 researcher, an engineer, Jonathan Cole, who did experiments in his backyard. It's very good videos. I advise everybody to go look it up. Jonathan Cole, 9/11, probably the best way to find it. And he created what he called a thermitic box cutter, and it shows this entire process of figuring out how to do this, and he was actually able to cut steel members, just like the ones in the World Trade Center on that day. So this is very possible. This is what the evidence suggests. This is not our opinion. This is what we are finding. Now, you go to NIST and you say, hey, this team of scientists did these tests on the dust. Why don't you do the same thing? You know, we assume they have World Trade Center dust on hand. It was a pretty important event after all. Refute them or confirm them, but do the tests. And NIST won't do it. You know what their reasoning is? Well, we don't expect to find anything, so we're not going to do the tests.
That's not very scientific. I don't expect to find anything, so I'm not going to conduct the experiment. That doesn't sound right at all. I'm laughing.
It's political science, not real science.
Okay, fair enough. Listen, if you have a low expectation, you could say I have a low expectation of finding, but you still test it anyway as a, I mean, okay, I'm sorry, go ahead. Political science, as you said, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, the paper has been out there. It has not been refuted at any point. Here, it was published in a journal, and it's up there for – I mean, believe me, there are people out there who just absolutely hate what we're saying right now, try to find every point they can make to try to refute us. They're unable to, though, when you put up their arguments to just basic logic. They're looking under every rock, but the paper still has not been refuted. NIST will not do the same test. It perfectly explains the molten metal elements found in Ground Zero or at Ground Zero on that day, perfectly explains how these buildings could have come down. So our story has stayed the same all of these years. NIST story has they took them a while to come up with a conclusion, and they can't even defend it when you find the flaws in their analysis. They just pretend that it doesn't exist. They fight us in court, and their excuse is that we don't have the legal authority to challenge them. on these matters. But they do everything they can simply to avoid standing toe-to-toe with us in a scientific debate. This is exactly why we need to keep this issue alive here 20 years later. It's just as important now as it was years ago. I mean, you were talking about the dust going all throughout, you know, and beyond Manhattan on that day. There are people who got sick as a result of breathing in those toxic that toxic air around the scene. And if you think about it, you know, they're not sick because airplanes ran into buildings. They're sick because the buildings came down. So for them, as they're stopping to breathe, walking up steps, trying to, just stay alive, you know, and fighting the government for healthcare funding and all of these things, for them, this issue is just as relevant today as it was 20 years ago because they're experiencing 9/11 a little bit every single day. And of course, the people who died on that day, such as Bobby McElvain, you know, he was going to a meeting in the World Trade Center and was killed. And he was actually at the morgue before the first of the towers came down on that morning. And the forensic pathologist that did the autopsy on Bobby told his father, you know, it looks like he was killed by an explosion here. And when you actually look into this, and you can watch our film, The Unspeakable, it came out last year. Dr. Cyril Wecht, very famous guy, was involved with the JFK stuff. Right. He's one of those guys that they bring on into documentaries to give his analysis whenever there's a murder mystery or something like that. Very well respected. Gave his own commentary on there, and it jives and agrees with ours. So there's major problems here with this official story, and at the very least, we owe it to the people that died that day, like Bobby McElvain, to have a new investigation. Now, the good news is the AE 9/11 Truth has done most of the work for our elected officials in Washington. You know, for years, we just asked for a new investigation, and we wanted them to do it, but then we said, you know, we're going to take the bull by the horns here, and we're going to write the legislation for you. So we have the Bobby McElvain World Trade Center Investigation Act. This is draft legislation for exactly what we've been calling for, and it would force Congress to actually look into this evidence that I'm talking about today, so they can't just bring out NIST to regurgitate the same talking points we've been hearing from them for years. And it would satisfy exactly, you know, what the families have been asking for since the 9/11 Commission and such. And we've been trying to push this, you know, and lobby for this from Congress for a number of years, but we're going to have to hear – they're going to have to hear from a lot of people out there. So I'm encouraging people to get behind that.
Right. I interviewed Bobby's father on here also, and quite frankly, I mean, look, there's a guy who deserves answers. Very simple as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, look, we all do. Because as you said, this has affected a lot of people, and it really does affect all of us here who are still here, because again, our reality was ever after shaped by that. You know, and I'm not going with the politics with you on right here. I mean, we could, but who needs it? We know that everything was very much altered in this country for sure after that point. And I knew guys who did get over there and volunteered. As I said, I was trying to get there the first day. And then afterwards, I was supplying things like water and gloves and stuff like this directly to volunteers because there was no infrastructure. You know, they didn't have all the people ready to do stuff until some weeks later. They had, you know, a whole bunch of emergency stuff coming in and different things happened. At first, they were just, you know, please show up. They called for anybody in the area to come and help, which they did. And there's a bunch of people that I can tell you personally, I've known people that had breathing issues, troubles, years after, over a decade afterwards. Maybe I'm not in contact with some of those people anymore, but people that I knew really well personally that were directly affected physically. They told them it was safe, by the way, you know, to go there and do that work. But all of this, again, begins with the problematic premise of exactly what happened here. And if it was known that there was this kind of toxicity in the area, I mean, that's just as good as somebody, you know, doing all sorts of harm, murdering people, in fact, because there are people that have died since who were sick. And it's not just firefighters. It's not just cops. It's not just. It's a lot of people, man. It's really a lot of people. I mean, I know John Fields, and I support what he does, is out there and makes his points. you know, and even when I see some of these things have come up recently, I support the idea that something needs to be done here over and over again. A reinvestigation, a true answer for what actually occurred, well, that would be nice, wouldn't it? That would be the responsible, righteous thing to do if the government was interested in having that in the hands of the public. But there you go. As you said, unless they hear from a lot of us, it's not going to get done. So outside of signing the petitions over there, what else can people do?
Well, we just talked about the Bobby McElvain World Trade Center Investigation Act. We've had that since, I believe, 2018. Sometimes I get my years wrong, but it was 2017 or 2018. But it's been around a long time.
Right.
And we keep it there because, I mean, it's ready to go for any courageous congressperson to step forward and introduce it. But as I learned many years ago from just various people, training activists that I've encountered, you got to make them feel pain. And I don't mean in a physical way. I mean in a career-wise way. They need to know that their constituents are fully behind this issue. So that requires calling them up, telling them about every little thing that happens. You know, one of the reasons that we do 9/11 free fall is because we want to keep our supporters informed of all of the developments and all of the work that we are doing. Some people just want to hear the evidence and know that it was a controlled demolition and move on. But a lot of people like to get into the nitty gritty and know what's going on in our current lawsuit with NIST, for instance. I think if you want to help out in this effort, you can get on the phone with your member of Congress, tell them your name, tell them you're a constituent, and tell them what's going on with all of these different things that AE 9/11 Truth is doing. Let them know that you fully stand with us, and you'll fully stand with them if they agree to pass the Bobby McElvain Act. So that's just one thing you can do. If you want to volunteer with us, you know, if you're somebody that has a few hours a week to dedicate to actual work, you know, there's a lot of things that we need help with getting done. Right now we have Project Due Diligence. And this is a great effort led by our current CEO, Roland Engel. And what it does is it sends our engineers to various ASCE chapters around the country, and they give a presentation on World Trade Center 7 and the Twin Towers 2 usually follows up with. But, you know, the ASCE top leadership, excuse me, doesn't support this. This is a completely grassroots effort that is going on. We have to do all of the work of setting this up, calling these branch presidents, and giving them our pitch and letting our engineers walk through their doors to talk to their local membership about it. All right, that requires people to help us on the phones, call them up, you know, people to look them up, because the ASCE doesn't make it as easy to find them now for some reason after we've been starting these efforts. So yeah, if you want to help us out with volunteering, you can just go to ae911truth.org, find the volunteer form. It's at the top there under Get Involved, and fill that out. And again, you don't have to do all of the work. That's the great thing about efforts like this. You can do a little bit of the work, be part of an important team, and do your part, and it goes a long way. You can subscribe to our emails. That's how you get 9/11 free fall when a new one comes out, or that's how you get our news updates, and that's how you stay informed of what's happening with this issue. You know, we don't just go out and make the presentation and call it a day. We have efforts going on. I mean, our director of strategy, Ted Walter, strategy and development is the full title. I mean, it's Herculean what he has been doing with our legal efforts, with our outreach and such. And, you know, you can keep informed on what he's doing there. And we have so many other people that are just working hard, or project due diligence volunteers. And we also have certain projects like films and my book and all of this other stuff. But you can know all about it by signing up for our emails. And be vocal. You know, I remember when I was first waking up to this, I still wasn't committed to the idea because it just seemed so crazy. All the stuff that I just laid out for you for the last hour and a half sounded so crazy, but I was talking with somebody about it, and he would talk very loudly on the subway train. Mm-hmm. And I could see other people turning and listening, eavesdropping on our conversations. Sometimes you can make a difference just by being a human radio, you know, and not backing down from it. Just standing tall and proud and saying, yeah, I think it was a controlled demolition. You should think that too. Here's the evidence. You know, talk about this openly in public. There's so many things that you can do, and just using your creativity to get the message out there. I mean, I used to use Chat Roulette, that website where you talk to different people around the world. I would just leave video of Building 7 going all day when I went off to my job. And all the people who encountered it that day would see that along with a message about it being a controlled demolition. We have to get the grassroots going again is, I guess, the thesis of what I'm trying to say. And so any way that you can get this information out there creatively, proudly, then you should consider doing it because we need that help.
Right. And look, I'm just going to go a little bit over the half-hour time limit here with you because I want to get in a couple of questions and comments from the chat, which, by the way, if you're in the live chat, go ahead and drop questions and comments there, and I will add them in for you. If you're on my Skype list, you can do that as well. You guys know that already because you message me all the time when I'm live with stuff that doesn't pertain to the show. But if you got a question or a comment for Andy, go ahead and do it, and I will read it straight to him. Here's the thing. I got one right away, actually, already in the Skype. That's why I'm laughing at that. Okay, so this person, not going to identify you, dude, because I never know with you what your deal is. He sends me messages a lot, and they're usually pertinent. I guess he's probably about as old as I am, and he used to hand out DVDs, which I did as well, trying to get people to pay attention. Trying to get people to consider the situation, probably back, when I was doing this in 2008, 2010, firsthand when I was doing that. And you probably did it then. He wants to know if there is a particular singular, video presentation that you can show to somebody to get the conversation rolling.
Yeah, I mean, experts speak out. The full title is 9/11 Explosive Evidence, Experts Speak Out. If the person has a few hours to sit down, standard movie length, this film is, but it has all the various people from the fields of architecture, engineering, metallurgy, physicists, sitting down explaining why they don't believe the official story. It also has psychologists in there explaining why people resist this information when you talk to them about it. So I definitely recommend getting that film out to various people. If they only got a few minutes, you can show them Solving the Mystery of Building 7. This was hosted by the late Ed Asner, talking just about Building 7. And that has a lot of great information, too. That's for the shortest attention span crowd that only has those 15 minutes to get this important information. So those are the films to consider for outreach. And also, too, if you want to talk about the impact of September 11th on people, then check out our film from last year, The Unspeakable. That is features Bob McElvain, Bill Brenner, various family members who, just kind of go through their lives in this film and talk about the impact that this cover-up has had on them. And it's a very emotional film, a very different kind of film than what we normally put out. But you can actually, follow Bob McElvain around in his house. He goes into Bobby McElvain's bedroom that day, and you just get a side of this that you don't very much see, a side that gets lost when you're talking about all these factoids related to September 11th. So that one is a good one as well.
Right. Okay, so question I'll just answer. Yes, I interviewed Bob McElvain on this show. You'd have to go back in the archives and check it out. It was researcher John Gold who got me in touch with Bob McElvain Sr. Okay, so yes, that happened. Okay, anyways, another one here. The FDNY official Twitter account's a comment agrees with this. Do you know anything about that, Andy? Which I don't know which part of the discussion we were in there when they said that.
Just so I understand the question, they're saying that the official FDNY Twitter account agrees with Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth.
Yeah, on a particular point, I guess.
I'm not aware of that, but if that's the case, I'd love for somebody to send that to us. You can send that to me. Send me a screen print. Just send it to A Steele, and remember there's an E at the end of my name, so A-S-T-E-E-L-E at AE911truth.org. Yeah, we're not omnipresent. Sometimes things happen related to this issue, but we haven't seen it, so if we don't see what we don't see. So if that's true, please send me that screen print.
Sure. Also, has there been any study done on the burned up cars that were around the area of the World Trade Center that were around the blocks surrounding the complex is the question.
That's a good point. There were cars that were toasted there that morning. I'm not aware of any official studies on those cars, so that's the best I can say.
Okay, fair enough. Look, I'm just asking the questions as presented. yes, Cyril Wecht. Yes, Cyril Wecht agreeing. Yeah, I'm well aware who Cyril Wecht is. Thank you. and I do generally agree with Cyril's conclusions on most things. And of course, so does Duquesne University, who named the School of Legal Medicine after him. Anyway, just saying, he's not just a guy who shows up in documentaries. He's also a legitimate academic source on stuff like that. You were talking about that related to Bobby McElvain's death. And Cyril Wecht examining it. Would you like to elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, you can actually, everybody can watch it for themselves. The one of the producers on The Unspeakable was able to land an interview with Cyril Wecht, and he looked over the autopsy report and gave a very favorable analysis to our side of things. So that is all in that film. Go to watch The Unspeakable. You can actually, I believe you can watch it for free on YouTube. The Unspeakable. So just type it in, The Unspeakable 9/11. Okay. And, so even he appears to have questions about the death of Bobby McElvain, at least.
Fair enough. No, I just wanted to point it out. I mean, you know, he's just he's a world-renowned expert. Anyways, on top of that, what else do we have here? Okay, Christy Todd Whitman, the EPA. Yeah, that's what I was talking about when they said it was safe to go there and dig people out. Yes, that's exactly what I was talking about there. And yes, I know she was a former New Jersey governor. Unfortunately, okay. Well, let me ask you, here's a funny question just from my head. The unspeakable, you know what? That is a phrase that I've now heard to describe a darkness of sorts that Dr. James Douglas, okay, who wrote the book JFK and the Unspeakable and then wrote about Gandhi and also the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr., framed this based on this series of letters from a Catholic monk, sort of. Are you is that where that phrase comes from? Why is it called the Unspeakable, do you know?
There's a quote in the film that cites that, and it so perfectly exemplifies what we are dealing with here regarding this issue. I mean, you know, I just laid out a ton of facts on everybody, and, you know, this isn't just me. I mean, this is an entire movement here that has been talking about these things for so long here. William Binney, former NSA technical director, I mean, he's the one who said they ignored observable facts. He signed our petition. So many people have so many questions about this event, and for many of them, it goes beyond questions. They know we were lied to. The evidence shows this, but the corporate media is silent. They pretend it doesn't exist, or when they are forced to address it in some way, shape, or form, they ridicule it. They go into a mass perception project of trying to tell people that, you know, there is nothing to any of this. Ignore all the credentials of the people bringing this up. It's just a conspiracy theory. So this entire issue itself is an unspeakable issue. And I don't have the direct quote off the top of my head that's cited in that film, but that's where they got the inspiration.
Okay, Thomas Merton is probably where it came from. But okay, fair enough. I figured I'd throw that one in. I guess. Oh, I've got one more on the Skype. Sorry, this one is anything about the Pentagon that your guest wants to say.
Not really. We don't cover that. We've got our hands full with the three towers that fell in New York. A lot of that stuff goes into aviation, which we're not really qualified to talk about. So we don't have any position on the Pentagon.
No, fair enough. I just figured I'd ask it since it was there. And I did mean to get to it to say, you know, look, there was a lot more going on that day, though. This is something that does need to be taken in context. As you said, your focus is on the And obviously, architects and engineers focusing on the buildings that collapsed. The Pentagon didn't collapse, okay? There was a partial collapse. But what can I say? It's not something that needs to be focused on. It's not quite as bizarre in my mind as what happened in New York, but there are people that do focus on it and research on it, and I think honest questions there are still wide open as well. So I'll just leave it at that, Andy, from me. That's not from you. That I think that there's still questions to be answered there, but it's not something that the organization that you're attached to does. So it's just that simple, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people who argue about what did or did not happen at that site, but where we keep our focuses on is what most of the 9/11 truth movement will agree with. You start with Building 7, and you, right. I mean, most people with two eyes and common sense, you know, believe in physics and common sense, will watch that building fall and realize there's no way that could have happened in that fashion without explosives being used. Right there, that throws the entire 9/11 story into question. Now, my ultimate dream is for them to acknowledge what really happened to these buildings. We can be done. I will sit with a bowl of popcorn and watch C-SPAN, and then they can investigate the entire matter, right down to the geopolitics, who knew what, who was responsible, all that. But before we get to that point, before we can even start pointing fingers, we've got to get the system, and I mean the government and media, to acknowledge the what. What really happened there in New York? What everybody can plainly see happen just by watching the event, you know? And so that's where we start. So we can't run until we start walking.
Right. And one more comment from the chat room is that CNN gave a premature report that Building 7 collapsed at 11:15 a.m., they said. In the chat
that
room.
True.
That sounds true to me. And I believe that was correct. Now, I'll tell you, in the melee of the day, I don't remember how it went down. I remember that it was announced, but I don't remember even seeing footage that day of the building collapse. I think it was not released to the public until later, that footage. Is that right? Or am I off on that?
Well, I watched it collapse on that day, and I remember exactly which broadcast it was. It was on MSNBC, Ashley Banfield, because I just, you know how certain things stick out in your brain, and I remember she was talking to a woman who had a baby,
right.
Either in her arms or attached to her on one of those harness things, and I remember her saying, "Watch your baby," you know, and so that kind of stuck out in my mind, but I did watch it come down, and I thought, you know, I thought it was like a controlled demolition, but I didn't go any further because it was just such a chaotic day. And I was believing what the TV told me about it from one moment to the next. It wasn't even introduced into my paradigm that I should even question what we're being told by the news on something this important. It took years. And coming across this information quite by accident, one of the first people that I saw speaking about this was Dr. Stephen Jones, talking about Building 7. You know, and so I would watch his videos. And then I would show a family member the same videos later in the day, so I was getting it twice because I just couldn't believe what I was seeing, but I couldn't refute it. And that's what started me down this road. And now, you know, here I am talking about it myself, and a lot of people can do the same kinds of things that we've done here at AE 9/11 Truth over the years. All it takes is a little bit of ambition and a desire to see justice done for these people. But it's not just for the people that died on September 11th or the people that died in the wars that followed September 11th. When you talk about this issue, right, what it does is it has a three-dimensional impact. So if there's other issues that you're upset about happening in this world, you know, other official stories that you don't agree with, by talking about September 11th and the controlled demolition evidence and all of the science, you are spray painting the message, "Remember Building 7," over all of the messages that are being put out by our politicians and media in the future. Because you wake somebody up to this, you wake them up to a lot of things. This is a big lie that we've been given. And so if they're lying about that, what else could they be lying about? So there's this three-dimensional impact. And who knows, maybe that 15-year-old who is listening to this interview right now, he grows up to be the next congressman from his or her state. And because they have this in their mind, another event takes place. Maybe they don't support the next Patriot Act that gets put on their desk.
That's right.
So we're having impacts everywhere just by planting these seeds.
No, absolutely true. And again, you know, I say in defense of being an adult at the time, it sounds weird, but you don't need to be ashamed even if you weren't readily read into the idea that this should be questioned, okay? You can see it now, and you can see what the problem is now. and you could have seen it 10 years ago, and you could have seen it 20 years ago, okay? It doesn't matter. If you see that there is a problem with the official explanation, if you see that there is a problem with what has been done in the name of the official explanation ever after, then it's always a good time to get active. And quite honestly, Andy, I don't even think you need the last 20 minutes of the show, because you've already concluded and given everybody marching orders, okay, and given us a lot of ammunition. If you weren't aware of this stuff before, you are now. Okay, it's just that simple. And like I said, a lot of show notes are going to be in there. I'll check and see if there's any final questions here and give you a chance if there's anything you want to say in closing here. But quite frankly, I don't even think you need the last little bit of my show even to complete your thoughts.
Let me tell them about the book here, because we're on the march right now, and with all these interviews, because we just about a year ago, but it took a while because of the shipping industry problems to come in, but we published a book. This is my book. It's a graphic novel, so that means it's like a really big comic book, and we're always thinking of creative ways to get the information out, and we put out a lot of documentaries, and we come up with gimmicks and stuff to publicize the controlled demolition evidence. And I said, you know what, I got some art skills and I'm a pretty good storyteller, so why don't I write a graphic novel about this issue, sort of like what JFK, the film JFK, did for the JFK movement, right. Except I don't have those kinds of resources to make a big budget film. But I made a 400-page graphic novel, and it's called Born on 9/11. You can get it right at the AE 9/11 Truth store. And this is a story of Kevin Langdon, who's a fictional character, but it's what Jack Blood on his show called Faction. We put a lot of the controlled demolition evidence within the context of the story. And on September 11th, Kevin is born, and his father is a firefighter for the city of New York. His father runs into the North Tower to try to save more lives, and he ends up getting killed in there. So just as he's getting killed, Kevin is getting born. And then flash forward to Kevin's 18th birthday. Around that time, he's questioning the circumstances of that day, the official story that we've been given. Now, I don't want to tell too much about the story because I want people to read it. But as he begins to question and get more public, he sees some of the forces at work that are trying to keep this official lie protected. And it's a very interesting story, I've been told. We've gotten a lot of endorsements from various people. You can see them on the back of the book. But that is available at the AE 9/11 Truth store. And when you buy the book, all the proceeds go to help support us and our important mission. I'm not getting any money for it. This is all for the cause. Right. So consider buying that.
And I'm going to put in the show notes, already put in the chat room, Born on 9/11, the link to go take a look at the book and the cover. Also, the home station for 9/11 Freefall, which is BBS Radio. And, yeah, I got a link for that. I've also got, let's see. Oh, I've got your Apple link for 9/11 Freefall as well. So I put those in the chat, and they'll also be in the show notes. Anything that goes in the chat goes in the show notes, guys. So you can always catch up on it if you're listening to us via the podcast. But, yeah, I definitely wanted you to promote the graphic novel. It looks really interesting. I don't have one yet, but the cover is really interesting. The style is kind of interesting. Now, I have one curiosity about this. Are you kind of doing this to answer the fact that they took the final commission report and created a comic book out of it? I mean, is it sort of like, hey, look, they have theirs, now we have ours? Is that part of your motivation or what?
Well, I'll let you in on a little secret. It was in the back of my mind while I did this. because I remember Rachel Maddow going after us on her show and saying, oh, they even have a comic book. And I actually came across this, I don't even know if you qualify that as a graphic novel. I came across it and bought it because of what I do. I should have a copy, and it's sitting in a box somewhere in the closet right now. Sure. But I thought, you know what? I can do better than them. And we actually give a very compelling story in this. It's not just, you know, rehashing everything I just talked about for the last hour and a half. We give you characters. And there's actually some cameos, too, by real people, such as Bob McElvain in the book. So, yes, awesome. They got their comic book, but we got ours, and I think ours is better.
No, look, fair enough. I thought that was a fair question, though, since they had done that. And, look, I didn't think it was a bad idea if you have, you know, a good story to tell, if you've actually got something educational to share, why not put it into a graphic novel? But the 9/11 commission report is not very educational. Again, you know, I love how they learned from the mistakes of the Warren Commission report. They don't give us any of the supporting data, right? So that we can't pick it apart. They just give us the volume. And here's a comic book too. So I love that you did this because it needs to be the bookend to theirs, as far as I'm concerned. So I think that's great. It was in the back of my mind. I somehow think it wasn't all the way in the back of your mind, but I won't dispute you. I think that that's great though. So that's excellent, man. So Bob McElvain makes an appearance in there. Again, really, really great guy. I was so happy to even just be able to interview him once. And he's been, you know, complaining the whole time. We wouldn't have gotten even the terrible reports that were released, right, without the interaction of people that were directly impacted. If it wasn't for the Jersey Girls, no 9/11 commission. I mean, I think you would agree with that, Andy. You know?
Well, yeah, they tried to avoid any kind of oversight or accountability on 9/11, and you would figure, I mean, good God, something horrible just happened here. We got to figure out what happened and prevent it from ever happening again. But no, they fought the formation of this. And even when they did it, they had the 9/11 commission. I mean, you know, this goes a little bit out of our bounds at AE, but you have President Bush can only testify with Dick Cheney there with him.
Yeah.
I mean, if I was the president of the United States, I would be the president. I'd be embarrassed if I had to have my handler sitting there with me while I testify. Why can't you just testify alone and stand up for yourself and speak for yourself? So, I mean, there's a lot of problems. There's a lot of problems with 9/11 overall. I'm not in a bubble here. You know, we focus on what we can prove with the hard science here at AE 9/11 Truth. And Building 7 is the smoking gun to unite under, but you know, we didn't get justice for the people that died that day. The American people were underserved in their leadership. And I think that it's never too late for a do-over. And I, you know, people say, oh, you can't expose this. You know, if you're right, then this will cause the complete downfall of the United States government. And, you know, nobody will ever trust their government again. But what they forget is that, you know, there's been horrible things that have happened in history before, including here in the United States. At one point, this country had slavery. Terrible, terrible institution. Just a very evil thing that existed here not that long ago in the big span of human history, right? So, you know, we had a big civil war over it, and luckily the good side won. But, you know, we moved on as a country, and what we do when we look back at that, we acknowledge how horrible it was, and we celebrate the abolitionists who struggled for so long to overcome this. I think we could do the same thing with 9/11. I think that we could survive this. I think we'd be a better country as a result of 9/11 Truth. So let's get that ball rolling and let's get the process started and acknowledge what's right in front of us. Get that new investigation.
Right. And you can get involved again if you go over to AE911. You know, I'm going to give you the link for it, but go ahead and give us that link once again. If they want to go ahead and get involved, they can get involved in various different ways through that organization directly. And look, if you're intimidated, you think, okay, well, I don't have all the information that Andy has, or I don't know all the stuff Andy knows off the top of his head, you can still do this. You can be part of it, number one. Number two, would you mind telling us a little preview, anything coming up on 9/11 Freefall on your podcast, like a little preview?
Well, yeah, I mean, we have new guests every week. We're still, I'm actually waiting on a callback from a potential guest for this week. Sometimes we do reruns and such, but we're going to be coming up to the anniversary pretty soon, and we're going to have some major announcements regarding what we're doing on that anniversary, but I can't tell until they send out the bulletin. So just keep an eye out. If you're not signed up for our emails, go to ae911truth.org. That is the URL you were just speaking of. And right there it says subscribe. You just put your email address in, and then you'll get emails from us telling you about all of the new stuff that we're doing. You know, we're going to be talking a lot about, you know, the anniversary coming up here on 9/11 Freefall. And there's some exciting stuff in the works. I'm not going to open my mouth any more than that.
But, not going to spoil it, but if they go to your podcast, they'll be able to keep track of it. Right?
They will. And that's 911freefall.com. I mean, the second something comes out, I'm all over it here. So, you know, whenever there's a development with our legal proceedings against NIST, I will be covering it. And I certainly have a lot to say, even when you get into the legal nitty-gritty, which I'm not a lawyer, but we bring on Mick Harrison from the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry, who's our lawyer on this NIST lawsuit, and Ted Walter. So whatever I don't know, they will fill in the gaps, and that's what you're going to get at 9/11 Free Fall, is round-the-clock coverage of pretty much everything that's going on in the movement, and especially here at AE 9/11 Truth.
There you have it. Andy Steele, I want to thank you for taking this extra amount of time with me. I mean, I know it took a lot longer than Jack did to get your message out, but I appreciate you taking the time, and really, thank you, man.
Thanks for having me.
Anyway, guys, I'm going to come back with just a little wrap-up for the show. I think Andy said it all, and what else can you say? We got to get back on this. This is not something that can just remain in the apathetic bin. It's that simple. Anyway, Andy Steele, 9/11 Free Fall, that is the name of the podcast. Check it out, and also check out all the links in the show notes. Lots of stuff there for you to study for yourself.
Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
The War State by Michael Swanson explains the great national transformation that took place and put the Kennedy presidency in the context of the times, and reveals never-before-published information about the Cuban Missile Crisis. President Kennedy would not have been assassinated if he had been president 200 years ago. His assassination took place in the context of the Cold War and the rise of the national security state. Before World War II, the United States was a continental republic. In the decade that followed, it became an imperial superpower. Generals such as Curtis LeMay not only wanted to invade Cuba, but knew that there were short-range missiles on the island armed with nuclear warheads that they could not destroy because they were on mobile launchers. Their invasion could have led to a third world war, and they wanted to go to war anyway. The War State by Michael Swanson reveals why and will show you what President Kennedy was up against. For more information, thewarstate.com.
Revelation through conversation.
Ochilli.com.
Get ready for the Ochilli Effect.
Closing couple of minutes of this Monday night broadcast here on Ochilli.com. Do appreciate you for tuning in. And those of you that are catching it by the podcast, thank you also. I know I asked a lot of open questions of Andy Steele here during this discussion. Obviously, I have my own viewpoints about this. They're not far from Andy's. How about that? But I wanted him to explain him. I wanted him to articulate what it was his position is, what it is that his organization's position is. Little embarrassment, though, there. Didn't realize Richard Gage was no longer with AE911. But, hey, look, I admit fully that I have not stayed in the loop when it comes to 9/11 truth. I just have not. And I think we need to get back on track with that with the show. So I'm going to start doing that more actively, especially as we approach the anniversary here. And I think it is worthy of discussion. We're going to bring on some different people. Who knows? Maybe I'll grab Richard Gage anyway because he's out on his own thing now, apparently. So maybe we'll get him too. Maybe we'll get a few others. I don't know. I want to get the best individuals who have studied this a lot more than I have. I can tell you what I saw firsthand. I can tell you what was happening that day in the area. I can tell you a lot of stuff. But I don't know it all. I definitely don't. I never do. So that's why I'm more than happy to bring on somebody like Andy Steele. And again, all those links and things, if you roll back the Ocelli chat room, Chris Graves was in there laying out a whole bunch of stuff for you guys to go ahead and roll back the chat room at Ocelli.com if you go to the Listen Live page. But you know what? If you're lazy, it's there in the show notes. So wherever the show gets distributed, which is no longer being distributed on YouTube, and far as I know, they might have eliminated my channel by now. I haven't looked at my email in a couple hours, so it's coming. What are you going to do? Anyway, just wanted to, like I said, close out the show, give you my final thoughts. I think these are all excellent points. And again, I don't blame them for not getting into the Pentagon, because the Pentagon is a whole other area of controversy, you know. And is this about aviation? And is this about the pattern the plane flew in, and so on and so forth? And we all know about the fact that a whole lot of, hate to use this word, truthers, have hijacked the process, have hijacked the narrative, have turned around and created a whole bunch of nonsense in order to keep us distracted, keep our eye off the ball. And the ball really is what has happened to us in the post 9/11 reality. What has occurred, what has been done in the name of those events on September 11th, 2001? What has happened? It's not just the Patriot Act, although the Patriot Act is in play. It's not just the new surveillance capitalism that is welcomed. It is not just the older school sort of surveillance, where people do expect to be on videotape everywhere they go. They do expect to have a camera in their phone so they can watch each other. Everybody's got cameras everywhere. And why? Because they've been made to feel as though they are insecure. And is that reality? Indeed it is. But the bigger question is about who is actually making us insecure, who is actually responsible for these watershed events that have caused the falls to cascade over. Who has created the circumstance we find ourselves in? I would ask that question over and over again, and I would ask who is responsible for the points of ignition that caused the explosion that led to it. The Ocelli Effect is done for a Monday. So no matter who you are, where you are, when you are, remember, I am merely Ocelli. All of you are indeed the effect. Good night.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State. understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Go there now.